poverty and inequality to the breakdown of institutions. The impact of corruption is far-reaching and is often underestimated. With countries like the UK and the US having anti-bribery laws and generally strong governance standards, some think that corruption is a problem for somewhere else. But that's usually because corruption is hidden out of sight, behind a veil of corporate opacity, often through legal entities acting not as legitimate businesses, but rather as getaway vehicles. But just how widespread is the abuse of companies as an enabler for corruption? Well, I'm Rebecca Lee. I'm the Chief Impact Officer at Open Corporates. And to discuss this and the role that data and legislation can play in turning the tide, I'm really excited to be joined by Steve Goodrich, Head of Research and Investigations at Transparency International UK. Steve's team recently published a fascinating report entitled Partners in Crime, which highlighted the extensive abuse of UK limited liability partnerships, also known as LLPs, at what looks to be like an industrial scale. So, Steve, for our listeners who haven't read your astounding conclusions in your Partners in Crime report, can you tell us about some of your key findings?
Sure, and thanks very much for having me on your podcast. So, limited liability partnerships have been used traditionally or associated traditionally with certain types of businesses, such as private equity investments and also legal firms. But what we noticed was that they also turned up repeatedly in high-level corruption and money laundering scandals. And we saw this pattern whereby the sort of structure of these LLPs, the way they were controlled by these secretive offshore corporate partners, suggested that this was happening on a big scale. So we dug into it a bit deeper. We found 8 key characteristics, or red flags, if you like, for these LLPs, which are highly suggestive that they might be being abused in high-end financial crime. And digging into this more deeply and looking at the UK corporate register, we found that there's over 21,000, that's over 1 in 10 LLPs ever incorporated, with at least 3 or more of these characteristics, these red flags. Within that included a core sort of network of at least 15,000 LLPs, where we've got a high level of certainty that they've been used for some sort of nefarious purpose. And then together, we think that whilst it's quite difficult to estimate the sort of scale of activity here, given we've only been able to use sort of nuggets of data from investigations by journalists and the old court case to sort of inform this, but we think the sort of level of damage caused by these rogue entities could be in the tens, if not hundreds of billions of pounds.
That is absolutely phenomenal. You said that there were a number of red flag characteristics that you really picked up on. Do you want to talk us through a couple of those? Because I looked at them and I was really lucky to get that early look at your report. I felt that these characteristics were something that should have been picked up on. They were really quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are really quite obvious when you look at. So I'll break it down. In terms of when these LLPs were incorporated, it tends to be between sort of 2005, 2015, in that sort of range, and then usually have one or more corporate partners from one of 21 high-risk jurisdictions. We call them like high-risk jurisdictions, but they're places where there's very little information about the directors, the financial activity, or the beneficial owners of companies in those places, and they're sort of notorious for forming some financial crime. And 15 of these are either sort of British overseas territories or members of British Commonwealth. And, you know, classic ones would be British Virgin Islands, but also Belize, Seychelles, Marshall Islands, and Panama as well were ones that were frequently used. And so you'd have these sort of offshore corporate partners, these secretive companies controlling the LLPs and hiding their real owners from public view. There would tend to be very little natural persons on the paperwork. It would just be like, you know, maybe one entity from BVI and one from Belize, or one from Seychelles, one from Marshall Islands. Very few actual people on any of the filings on Companies House. These corporate partners would just turn up time and time again. So we'd have like entity A and entity B as partner of one LLP. They would appear together on like hundreds of others, sometimes even thousands of other LLPs. So it was quite obvious there was a network then. If you've seen the tweets and works with the likes of Graham Barrow, he's picked up on these sort of patterns really well. When you look at it, it's quite astonishing just how formulaic some of this is. And then also the LLPs were registered a relatively small number of addresses. We call sort of company factories. As one of them, 175 Darks Lane. So the BBC dubbed as one of the dodgiest like addresses in the world, you know, just because the amount of times that you get companies incorporated and registered at that address turn up in sort of, you know, embezzlement of public funds, you know, large-scale bribery, etc. So similarly for the offshore corporate partners of these LLPs, they're also registered at a very small number of addresses in the Marshall Islands and Belize, etc. So, and then the final one, from 2016, UK companies have had to declare who their beneficial owner is, and it'll be available on the public record. Because most of these LLPs were incorporated up until like 2015, they often like dissolved within a very short period of time. But there are some beneficial ownership filings for these LLPs. And what's really curious as well is that there seems to be a very particular client base, or at least a very particular region in which these supposed beneficial owners come from. After the UK, they're the most frequently used ones tend to be from the former Soviet Union, for want of a better term, in particular Russia and Ukraine. That is really interesting when you look at the underlying data for those that we know have been involved in financial crime, because that's often where the dirty money comes from. That's often where the money's been stolen from the public purse, banks, and then moved through the global economy. So there's some really shockingly and easily identifiable characteristics for these LLPs that, I mean, I don't know why it hasn't been picked up earlier. And obviously, there's some journalists who have picked up on the individual stories, but in terms of the macro analysis, you know, this the first sort of systemic analysis that we've seen of this issue.
Yeah, certainly the first high-level report I've seen really digging into the specifics around LLPs in this way. So that really is a truly industrial scale when you're looking at the numbers. The 1 in 10 companies that you think ever incorporated share these characteristics. Do you think it's a new phenomenon? You talk about the 2005 to 2015 when they were registered. Do you think it's been going on longer than that or outside of LLPs? What's your view?
Certainly. I mean, so this is just talking about limited liability partnerships, which were relatively new legal concept in the UK from 2000. But if you look at other types of legal entity, for example, private limited companies in the UK, but also its offshore financial centres like the BVI in particular, but also Jersey, Isle of Man, you know, we're talking, this goes back decades. So this is almost like one of the more recent iterations or methods for corrupt politicians and organised crime groups to sort of move dirty money through the global economy. We've seen as well the abuse of Scottish limited partnerships, as well as English and Northern Irish limited partnerships as well in more recent years. So this is just a more recent chapter in what's been a long and ongoing issue. And we're sort of seeing people who are involved in this abuse of UK legal entities starting to move into other sectors as well, like e-payments. So this is an issue that's been going on for a long time and it's not going away. And you know, frankly, I think that the sort of pace of public policy change to try and keep up with it has been inadequate to date. So nothing new here, but it's the latest in the set of issues that the UK is yet to address properly.
So, I mean, some of our listeners might be going, well, that's really interesting, but why is this so bad? What are the negative impacts we've seen when companies abused like this?
Yeah, so let's bring out some case studies, some examples to sort of bring it to life a bit, because it is sounds a bit academic. We're just talking about stuff that's filed to companies' house and, you know, that it all sounds like a bit of paper shuffling. So, start off in Moldova, there was essentially a pretty audacious scheme there involving some corrupt businessmen and corrupt judges that essentially allowed the theft of an eighth of the country's annual GDP pretty much overnight, which included shell companies, including LLPs, to sort of funnel this money out of the economy. So Moldova, you might have heard of it, it's like one of the most impoverished countries in Europe, if not the most impoverished former Soviet jurisdiction. That is, in any context, but in particular there, you know, an eighth of the country's GDP stolen overnight because people were allowed to file nonsense, frankly, on companies' house and nobody picked it up. There have been some of the banks that the money was moved through, or, you know, and they're still chasing down some of the money here. They don't even know where it's gone. You know, this is like billions of dollars, and it's just like disappeared in a flash because of Companies House essentially been used as a bit of an honesty box. There was some corrupt arms deals in Niger, which again, sort of a very impoverished country, fighting an insurgency with Boko Haram there, and money that was supposed to go towards new military equipment to help them fight this insurgency sort of, again, disappeared with the assistance of these shell companies, the real owners of which were sort of obscured from public view. And there's reason to suspect that the money went into the pockets of some politicians and officials from Niger. And then, and finally, there's bring things more up to date. You know, some of the abuse of limited liability partnerships has been for moving hot money out of Russia, including those connected to the security services there and Putin himself. There's real questions about to what extent in which money has been funneled, either stolen from the Russian people or used for foreign influence operations as well, to undermine the security of the UK and its allies. So this is not just like an academic issue. There's sort of tangible costs to people, whether in terms of their ability to fight insurgencies, to actually run essential services in their country like healthcare, or actually to, you know, real issues of national security that we're seeing playing out now in places like Ukraine. So this is like really serious stuff that doesn't get enough attention, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty phenomenal to realise that kind of $1 billion were transferred out of three banks, and as a result, the government had to step in and bail them out, and a huge amount of public purse impacts on that. I mean, it beggars belief, really. Turning to the how did you go about this investigation?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll be sort of big shout out to investigative journalists at the Organised Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, because frankly, without their work, you know, much of the data that we used that started off this, you know, wouldn't have been possible. So what we did was, when working with them, we noticed through their investigations into the called laundromats. So these are sort of large-scale industrial money laundering operations, again, principally money moving out of jurisdictions like Azerbaijan, Ukraine, Russia, and through what tended to be corrupted financial institutions in the Baltic states, you know, Latvia and Estonia, for example. You'd have large numbers of LLPs with bank accounts at these sort of Baltic banking institutions, processing large amounts of highly suspicious payments from coming out of banks in Russia, Ukraine, Azerbaijan, and then sort of flowing into the West. And when you start scratching the surface into, you know, who really controls these LLPs in these Baltic financial institutions, you know, alarm bells start going off. So it could be a sanctioned Ukrainian oligarch who's currently on the run in Russia. It could be those connected to Putin and the security services in Russia. Also, we've seen a recent case go to court here in which actually the money was funneled into the pockets of Azerbaijani politicians who were then using the money to invest in assets in the UK economy. The money sort of seems to be stolen from people back in Azerbaijan. So they did all this digging into banking records to sort of expose high-level corruption in Eastern Europe. And then we took that data, which was often quite messy. It's just, you know, this is leaked banking records, so it's quite hard to understand whether the entity you see in there is where it's registered. But luckily, there's not that many jurisdictions that have LLPs. There's us in some parts of the States and Canada, I think. And so what we were able to do, and using Open Corporates and Open Refine, was to use a bit of data extraction techniques to find anywhere that an LLP popped up in this banking data. And then we used Open Corporates to sort of confirm, to identify on the UK corporate register what the unique company number was for these entities. Imagine that you've got a passport number that tells you who you are as an individual. There's a similar thing for companies, and so we could extract that data. Then once we extracted that, we call this the ground truth data, the data that we knew these LLPs had been involved in some sort of wrongdoing. And then we knew which companies they were on Companies House with a relatively high level of accuracy. And then we sort of pulled all the data from Companies House to then just have a look at them and go, okay, individually, we've noticed there's a bit of a pattern. Let's see what it looks like on a macro level. And we found one of the eight characteristics I mentioned earlier, that a large number of them had controlling members in these secrecy jurisdictions like Belize and Seychelles. And we're like, okay, let's dig into this a bit more. Let's try and find all LLPs on Companies House that have at least one or more partners based in this list of 21 jurisdictions. So we go away, get a busy data analyst person to pull data from Companies House's database. Wherever there's an LLP with one or more corporate partners from these 21 jurisdictions, then we had a look at that and then started digging into these characteristics and more. Basically just analysed all the patterns that I mentioned earlier and just going like, okay, well, there's actually some things here that turn up time and time and time again. And then you start cross-referencing that back with the ground truth data, other sources. You know, we were struggling almost to keep up as we were doing the research. We kept on finding LLPs. You know, there's someone like UNDP's like blacklist for fraud. There's ones that turn up in like, you know, US State Department notices about sanctions evasion, you know, and FinCEN designations. They just keep on popping up everywhere. So it helped reinforce our view that, yeah, this isn't just a coincidence. This is like a modus operandi. There's a structure to this. And it's not just a coincidence that all these LLPs involved in bad stuff have similar characteristics. It's like an intentional structure. This is organized. This isn't just coincidence. So digging through and then combining that with like case studies and open source digging, you know, led us to conclude this is some serious stuff. It's got wildly out of control, and like government, law enforcement and AML supervisory bodies who are supposed to be like overseeing the people who set up these companies, you know, they've all been asleep at the wheel for like over a decade. And, you know, just chaos, absolute chaos has reigned.
Well, it certainly seems that. And I think I was astounded. Another one of the figures I was stand by in the report was the fact that the ground source truth of the suspicious transactions that have been already highlighted. I know they said there was some kind of overlap between different laundromats and different banks. Mm. That number was $730 billion worth of suspicious transactions that went back to these companies in the first place. I mean, that is a phenomenal place to start.
The thing is as well, is that what's really difficult to convey this is like the bigger the number, the harder it is for people to comprehend. You know, you and I, you might know what like, you know, 500 quid looks like, or like £1,000, or you might buy a car for 10 grand or something like that, and you might have to take out a loan for it. It's something a bit more like there's a human scale to it. Mm. But when you go into millions, billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions, the mind boggles, and it's quite hard to convey how serious this and like how big a problem is, especially, you know, we talked about Moldova earlier and how much, like, you know, they lost an eighth of GDP overnight, pretty much. That serious amounts of money have been lost from Ukraine during the period in which it was looted by Yanukovych and his cronies, and which would have undermined their ability to actually be prepared for things like the conflict now. That money has to come from somewhere, and it's money that should have gone into investing in things like housing, infrastructure, healthcare. The amount of good that you could do with that money, but instead it's just lined the pockets of corrupt politicians and businessmen. It boggles. And the thing is, a lot of this still hasn't been recovered. You know, a lot of it, they still don't even know where it's gone. And it's because of the UK's role in providing these shell companies and just like kind of thinking, well, you know, there's nothing wrong here, and being so slow at addressing the problem that's happened. So it really is a wake-up call now, I think, to go like, you know, we need to get a grip.
And I think it's important to note that having a UK company gives it an air of legitimacy that might not be appropriate, but it certainly does.
This is the way in which they advertise it. So you've got what are called trust and company service providers. The most infamous of them is Mossack Fonseca. They're the ones that sort of like made it a little bit more of a household name as an industry. But there's loads of people out there. There's this whole sort of like industry of people who will set up companies quickly and cheaply. And, you know, many are doing like completely legitimate business. If you've had to set up a company yourself, you might have gone to one of these and it says, you know, we'll help you set up a company in like 10 minutes, right? But then there's others who will go, yeah, okay, we'll set up a company for you. It'll take a very quick amount of time. We'll also act as your nominee shareholders or your nominee directors. We'll end up, some of them offer to be their nominee beneficial owner, which is illegal. You know, you're supposed to say who actually controls the company, but some are saying, oh, we'll put our name down on the paperwork so there's no trace of you. And they actively market to particular jurisdictions and to a particular clientele where there's some issues with governance. Russia is one where there's a certain number of them who not only advertise to people in Russia, you know, we've got colleagues there, it's not in and of itself a red line, but a particular clientele, like ultra high net worth individuals and politicians who obtain their wealth via questionable means. And the way in which they're advertising these services, you know, it's like, we'll keep your identity secret. We'll get you an account in a reputable international correspondent bank so you can help ping money around the world. And, you know, it's really problematic because that's how all of these laundromats sort of managed to move billions of pounds of money through the global financial system without many people like realizing it. It's because you've got this sort of UK front providing this reputable like veil of secrecy, you know, and people hadn't checked behind it until like it was almost too late. You know, yeah. The reason why people know to look at LLPs now, SLPs, is because it's been, you know, really it's been journalists who've like done most of the digging to find out that these things have happened. And, you know, by then it's, yeah, it's almost been a bit too late. No, the more you talk
about
it,
situation,
I think there's been like a big education process, and those in law enforcement and private sector that we work with, you know, really attuned to this now, and people are starting to look to like where the issue is going next. And there is legislation before Parliament now, you know, government's finding it. It's taken the war to really like jolt them into action, but they're now looking to reform Companies House, which is something that's been in the pipeworks for a long time, and it's great to see that. Now Companies House is going to be able to like scrutinise in a bit more detail some of the filings they get and try and tackle issues like this a bit more proactively than they've done today.
Talking about that, I mean, that is a real potential game changer in terms of the Companies House reform that is coming through the Economic Crime and Transparency Bill.
Yeah.
You as well as us kind of provided oral and written responses to Parliament and to the committees.
Yeah.
Do you think it lives up to expectations?
It's a pretty good start. I've been reflecting with colleagues, a lot of the things that we think could be improved with the bill, specifically in relation to the Companies House, actually, they're quite technical, still very important, but they're quite technical. And I think that sort of shows that quite a lot of the substantive policy issues government has listened to it. There's still improvements that can be made around the verification of shareholders, you know, making sure that when shareholders are reported to Companies House, that you actually know you've got a great uncertainty that it's the person you think it is. So, for example, me, you know, at the moment, we just have to put down Joe Bloggs. You know, there's no extra sort of information there. You know, is that Joe Bloggs who was born in like 1992? Is that Joe Bloggs that was born in 1956? Where are they from? You know, that kind of question. So you don't have that much certainty about who this person is, which is quite important because then shareholders knowing who they are can help you identify whether politicians maybe bought an asset, for example, in West Central London with money that wasn't really theirs in the first place. And the really important questions like that. So shareholder verification, that can be improved. There could be more powers in there for Companies House to go to these trust and company service providers, the people setting up companies and managing them on behalf of clients, to sort of say, okay, you said this is Joe Bloggs and they own this company. Can you please show us the documents that you have that will prove that? So at the moment, it's a bit of a complete honesty box. I could incorporate a company, put my name down as the Pope and say that's the beneficial owner. You know, I'm the beneficial owner and I'm sort of living in the Vatican. And there'll be very little checks on that. Nobody will really call my bluff. But you know, having more powers for Companies House to go to people incorporating companies on behalf of clients and saying like, you know, is it really the Pope who owns this company? You say it is, show us the paperwork to prove it. That would be really helpful to give us greater confidence in the accuracy of the register. And then finally, in our research, we say there's a big issue with opaque corporate partners in the case of limited liability partnerships, but also directors for limited companies, them controlling UK entities, because it provides that sort of veil of secrecy, this extra layer that you have to try and get behind to sort of call nonsense on some of the things that are filed to Companies House. So actually making it a legal requirement that if you want to be a member of an LLP, if you want to have a control a UK entity, then, and you want to do it via another company, then that company itself has to be transparent. So, you know, no longer any of these sort of shell games that have enabled the various different laundromats of yesteryear, you know, the opacity throughout the whole sort of chain of ownership, so you can really understand who's controlling these entities. Those three things. That's just on Companies House. I think there's a wider issue here, though, around how economic crime is policed in the UK. It's just been an issue that I suspect government's been aware of for a while and just like kick the can down the road because it's been put on a too difficult pile. You know, the likes of Mossack Fonseca, these trust and company service providers and others, you know, lawyers, accountants who provide services to incorporate companies to help like provide the supply chain for dirty money going from one country to another. The people who are supposed to be policing these businesses and making sure they do the right thing to make sure they don't onboard a criminal, to make sure that they report suspicious activity to the police, to make sure that they don't enable kleptocrats to buy high-level real estate in the UK. You know, a lot of these policing bodies are like not doing what they're supposed to. There's 25 of them, which is like far too many. It's an absolute nonsense. You've got 25 different bodies, 13 within the accountancy sector alone, who's supposed to be overseeing anti-money laundering checks within the private sector. And, you know, lots of them are riven with conflicts of interest. They go, when people are found to have broken the rules, they go easy on them because they're also, many of these are membership bodies. So they don't want to like find their own members because they might go and, you know, join a different organization. It's absolute madness. So having better policing of the private sector and like really sort of reforming anti-money laundering supervision, that's like a big, big area that this isn't dealing with. And then the other one is new areas of risk. And we're seeing a lot of people who are involved in the various different laundromats moving into the e-payment sector and like what's happening there. Has the FCA really got its handle on it? You know, the Financial Conduct Authority, the body that oversees the financial sector, are they really doing enough to make sure that this issue isn't just being displaced from the conventional banking sector into e-payments as well? Well, funnily, it wouldn't be a talk about financial crime if we didn't mention the Crown dependencies and overseas territories. So the places like the British Virgin Islands, which have become a byword for like financial impropriety, corruption, money laundering, all these sort of bad things, they really need to open up their corporate registries as well. It's not just about the UK, it's about what wider offshore financial centres are doing. And they promised to do so by the end of next year. I believe it when I see it. But, you know, you talk to anybody in law enforcement, BVI in particular is like a byword for badness. So, you know, until they open up, show who really owns companies there, I think there's always going to be a bit of a hole in our armour.
Yeah, I think we're all looking forward to, with heightened anticipation as to what's going to come out, whether the registers are going to come online as expected and what's going to come out of them providing that data.
Yeah.
I mean, I think similar to us, we've put through thoughts on a number of those things, particularly the fact that you can't outsource verification checks to formation agents who have been the enablers of much of this corporate crime. It just seems when we're trying really hard and the Companies House are trying really hard to reform and ensure that they become an authoritative department rather than a record-keeping register, It seems slightly crazy that there are some of these big loopholes being left to evade the issue.
Yeah, it's mad. It's like, okay, we know that people have been submitting duff information. What should we do? Oh, no, let's just get them to mark their own homework and just say on a piece of paper that like what they said is true. You know, you kind of need something a bit more, with a bit more edge than that, rather than just say, you know.
Absolutely, you sure and they need resources.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, what's been really positive about the UK, I think, to its credit, is that it has talked a good talk about recognising the role it plays in global corruption. I expect them to have been in complete denial, but actually it's following through, not just with nice looking laws, but actually making sure they're implemented properly in practice. And that's really key to actually like providing less space for corrupt politicians and their enablers to operate. And until we do that, it will remain just rhetoric rather than, you know, a reality.
Yeah. And we've got this odd situation where Companies House is kind of leading in terms of the fact that it provides open data, which is easily searchable, that is usable, and our beneficial ownership register similar. Yet you've kind of got the fact that it's operating badly in other ways. And talking about kind of Companies House and internationally, what do you think is the impact that legal entity data from open corporates, which looks to provide register data from around the world in one place?
Yeah.
Is that useful for investigating corruption?
So it's really useful that a lot of financial crime investigations about just it's following the money. You've got the money taken from one place and it's ended up in another place, and you might have like different snapshots of that movement of funds throughout the global economy. But invariably, it will involve a company or multiple companies, usually multiple interconnected companies, and sort of understanding the relationship between company A in Belize and company B be in the Marshall Islands. You think they're related in some way, but then you can start with tools like Oakland Corporate, you can see, oh, well, actually, you know, that there might be shared directors there, or, you know, shared addresses, or, you know, what we kept on doing was, like, when we were unsure about, see a company and we're like, we think it's this company in this jurisdiction, and then you're able to triangulate various other different data ports with Open Corps and then go, actually, yeah, we've got a relatively high level of confidence, this is that company, and then put together, it forms a clearer picture of whether it be money flows or the people involved in enabling that illicit wealth moving through the global economy, and going with a high level of certainty, yeah, we think this is how this scheme played out, where the money's gone. We think this asset has been bought with these funds, and you can link it all together. So having that global view, I think, is really important. And like, companies are really key to like most forms of financial crime. And you've got them all together in one place, you know, where the data is available. So that's pretty key to sort of like drilling into all sorts of nefarious activity.
Well, I'm really upset to say that's actually all we have time for today, because it's been really interesting talking to you. Thank you to Steve Goodrich, Head of Research and Investigations at Transparency International UK, for joining us. And of course, to all of you listening in. To find out more about the Partners in Crime report, visit the Transparency International UK website at transparency.org.uk. And in October alone, we added over 1.5 million companies to the Open Corporates website. Find out how we've done it at opencorporates.com.